The Carleton College Convocation Program is a weekly lecture series that brings fresh insights and perspectives from experts in a variety of fields. The program has a rich history dating back several decades. The selected convocation speakers assist the liberal arts mission of centering thoughtful conversations within education and beyond.
Suddenly you have all of this agency, but no one mentioned the responsibility that would come with it. You get to choose your classes, your major, your future. Still working on that last one. Transitioning to college, I found myself suddenly doubting my decision-making and academic abilities. One thing that Carleton has challenged me to do is build my confidence, to trust my own decisions, to learn to ask for help when I need it, and to believe that I am capable of overcoming difficult things. Something that seemed difficult and scary to me was applying to be a student wellness advocate, or SWA, on campus. As someone who is very passionate about sleep and mental health, working with and for my peers, and making access to health resources more equitable, I think it is so cool that we have an office on campus that provides these services to our students. But the thought of interviewing terrified me. However, I was able to overcome this fear, and today I am so grateful and excited by the work I get to do as a SWA, particularly with students' mental health. Someone else who cares a great deal about mental health is today's convocation speaker, Steve Hansen. Steve is a wellness speaker dedicated to holding conversations on how to navigate everyday challenges. He teaches how to overcome fear, guilt, shame, and self-doubt using tools such as communication, boundaries, and mental and emotional grit. By sharing his personal experiences, he hopes to empower, motivate, and help others reconnect their purpose. He supports students in taking care of their mental health, encourages them to seek related resources, especially if they would benefit from working with a professional regarding any of the topics in today's presentation. Please welcome Steve Hansen to Carleton College.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you all so very much for coming out today, whether you are here live and in person or watching virtually from some undisclosed location. I'm so happy that you are here. I have been looking forward to this day for an awfully long time. I really and truly have, and I want to thank you for spending some time with us this morning. I guess then the obvious question becomes, and the most important question becomes, how are you? Are you doing all right? Yes, I hope. I hope that things are going okay for you. As you have already heard from Margaret, and thank you for the introduction, as you've already heard, my name is Steve Hansen, and I am a speaker, an educator, a motivational mentor, and I am the founder of the Student Success Initiative. And I find myself here this morning, I suppose, because of a couple of reasons. One, I have had a fair amount of experience with things like anxiety, depression, self-doubt, even some self-harm. That's why today we're going to be talking about life skills, coping mechanisms, things that you can do to hopefully steer through life and make it a little bit easier, a little clearer. That's my hope. There's another reason, however, that I'm here today, and it's very, very simple. I believe in you. Really and truly. I believe in your gifts and in your talents and what you bring to the table, and I believe in what you can and will accomplish in your lifetime. Whether you know it or not, whether you believe it or not, you are capable of amazing things. You are capable of incredible things. You can impact the world and affect it in ways that you have not even begun to recognize. But here's the dirty little secret. You cannot be there for others, not in any real or sustainable way. You cannot be here for anyone else until you have learned how to be there for yourself. That's why today we're talking about self-care, because self-care is important. It is critical. It is not selfish. There's a great quote that is often attributed to Gandhi that says, if you want to change the world, start with yourself. And so I'm asking you this morning, are you ready to start? Yes? I hear some murmurings. Okay, so let us begin. In 2003, my then wife filed for divorce. I very quickly found myself sitting in the office of a behavioral psychologist. It didn't take Kim very long to figure out, and Kim is the therapist, by the way, it did not take Kim very long to figure out that there was something not quite right. And she didn't mean not quite right within the marriage, that's a given. She meant there wasn't something quite right with me. I mean, this is a person who studies human behavior for a living, so it's hard to pull one over on her. What she discovered quickly is, honestly, I didn't like myself. On my worst days, I outright hated myself. For a very long time, I simply believed that I deserved less than, well, just less. Just less. I was sarcastic. I was incredibly caustic. I had the ability to verbally eviscerate anyone in my path, and I've seen me do it, and I don't say that with any pride, but that's true. I oftentimes would create self-fulfilling prophecies that never ended well, not for me and not for those around me. Kim did two things for me, really, two very important things. The first thing she did is she made me understand that when the world blows storms through and life becomes a mess, and I promise you, life was a mess. When your life is a mess, it is perfectly valid. There is value in sifting through the debris. After all, you can't solve a problem if you don't know it's there. You first have to identify the problem. For me, that meant going all the way back to the fourth grade when the bullying began. It happened every day, almost virtually every day of my fourth grade year. And I'll save you the details, but what I will tell you is after that year, that group of sixth grade boys moved on to junior high. So problem solved, right? It's over. No, the problem was just beginning. See, it plants a seed and you start to believe all that stuff. It shapes your perspective and your worldview. And it screwed me up in ways that I cannot even today, I can't quite articulate. It was a mess. The second thing Kim did, and I would argue of equal or maybe even greater importance, and I cannot stress this enough, she made me understand that if you stay there too long, meaning the field of debris, if you stay there too long, you will very soon find yourself sitting in the filth, absorbing the stench. And as someone who overstayed my welcome by leaps and bounds, I can tell you firsthand, without a question of a doubt, that smell becomes increasingly more difficult to wash off. I am so grateful right now, today, that we live in a society and in a place, and even with all of our problems, in a country where we can talk about our feelings, when we can be vulnerable and when we can be open about how things affect us on a day-to-day basis. But, if feelings are all you have, if that's all you show up with, are just your feelings, you are in all kinds of trouble. If those feelings are not accompanied by the ability to think critically, to think for yourself and judge each situation on its own merits, if it doesn't come with some sort of plan of action to help move you forward, then at best, you have a bit of a dumpster fire. At its worst, and far more probable, you have an unmitigated runaway disaster. And I have seen that play out over and over and over and over again, not just in my life, but in virtually the lives of everyone I've ever known or ever met. And that may change, but as of right now, until I see it, I won't believe it, because that is the only thing I have ever seen. So if nothing else today, if nothing else comes from this today, let it be this one thing. The will to move forward, because you are bigger, you are much more than your circumstances, be they your past or your present. There needs to be an ability to move forward, to be your very best self. Now, I know you're saying, well, thanks, Steve, that's great. We're going to move forward. How do we do that? That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked. Let's discuss. For me, that means laying a foundation. Something, you know, that you can stand on, that isn't going to give way underneath your feet, that isn't going to slip and slide. I call those the two G's. The first of those G's is gratitude. Being grateful for what we have. Sometimes this ruffles a few feathers because people think you're negating problems, like ours aren't serious. They absolutely are. I would never say that. We have difficulties, right? And the things that sometimes reside between your ears are the worst of all. Nobody beats us up like we do. That being said, like I said, and even in this country with all of its problems, I realize that I am afforded opportunities and things that others may not be. And that doesn't make me better or worse. And I certainly never feel like, well, thank goodness that's not me. I'm glad it's them. No, I'm not happy for someone else's struggle. It just puts things into perspective a little bit. 3 weeks ago, I went into the emergency room because I believed I was having a heart attack. The doctors thought I was having a heart attack as well. As it turned out, I wasn't. I was having the worst anxiety attack I'd ever had, and I hadn't had one in over 20 years. But I was so grateful with the fact that immediately I was hooked up to an EKG, and there were people there to care for me. Not everybody has such things. I was so grateful. Look at your clothing and the things you wear. I bought these ridiculous shoes yesterday, right? I am afforded not only clothing, we all have the clothing on our back. I have it so good that I can actually think about form over function. I can actually consider fashion. That is a luxury. My house, and yep, the housing market is crazy, but I don't own a home right now. I rent. But nevertheless, is it a mansion? Absolutely not, but it's nice. It takes care of me. When I go to bed at night, I don't worry about bombs dropping on my head. Not yet. All we have is today, and thus far, that's never been an issue. I know when I lay my head down, it's not in a king-size bed on 1,500 thread count sheets, but nevertheless, I am comfortable. Food. You ever feel like, oh, macaroni and cheese, it's the third time this week. Oh, agony, agony, agony. I get to worry about what I'm going to eat, not if I'm going to eat. That is a massive difference. And I will tell you this, you can help people less fortunate. You can, even if it's just for that day, but you can help others. But your misery isn't going to help make it better. It is okay to smile. It is okay to be grateful. It is okay to enjoy your life. It doesn't mean you wish ill on somebody else. Joyce Meyer, who is a speaker, she once said that being miserable doesn't make the journey any easier. In fact, it makes it more difficult. Just because you've been given a cactus doesn't mean you have to sit on it. You just need to be aware of your blessings, just to even it out, not to make the other problems go away. That will take some pressure off. It helps with your mindset. The second of those G's is grace. Grace is how we interact with one another. It's how we get through the world with some kindness, with some understanding. So show of hands, let me hear. Have you ever wanted to put yourself out there for something? You see an opportunity, you're afraid, maybe it's an interview, and you hold back because in your head you think, I can't do it, I don't want to do it, I'm fearful. Maybe you are afraid of failure, Maybe you're afraid of what other people around you are going to say. Oh, no. What are they going to think? What if I fail in front of them? How silly am I going to look? Anybody ever have that? Or is it just me? Oh, good. I'm not alone. Well, I'm going to ease the burden a little bit. You're not perfect. You are never going to be perfect. You are flawed, and you are perfectly imperfect. You are where you are supposed to be. So then let me ask you this. How many of you, by a show of hands, would want to be remembered or thought of for your worst moment? The time when you said something terrible, angered somebody, disappointed somebody, offended somebody, and you said or did something awful, and then from then on everyone said, yep, that's that person. How many of you would want to be remembered for that and only that? I'll wait. Nobody, right? No, me either. Because I'll tell you something, I screwed up 7 times before breakfast today, and which is pretty good for me. Usually it's 9. I do dumb things, but I try and I put myself out there. Now, if you are willfully and intentionally trying to harm others, that's a different story. If you're not learning from your mistakes, that's a different story. But nobody's perfect. First of all, not you. So give yourself some grace. Offer yourself some grace and be okay with the fact that you're going to disappoint people sometimes. You're going to let somebody down, even yourself. And then if it's true for you, isn't it true for the other people? Even people you might not agree with? Isn't it possible that they're doing the best they can and you don't have to like it, but you don't have to punish them? I'm just asking. So, as we move forward today, I want to talk about tools, okay? That's kind of the foundation. Those are the things I stand on, at least I try to, gratitude and grace. Now comes the fun part. You get to be the architect of your life. You get to design it. And nobody else's life is going to be exactly like yours. You are a one of a kind. And you need the right tools for the job to start building. I've identified what I believe are 6 of those things of importance. And those 6 in no particular order are as follows. Self-talk. And I believe that Margaret talked a little bit about this, about the voices in our head and those things. And sometimes life tells us what a great job we're doing, but most of the time, probably not. I have my little buddy, my self-talk is so bad, I have a tattoo of him on my back and I named him. It's Frank. So when Frank wants to start talking to me, I have to learn to shut him up. See, we think it's hard to believe the good about ourselves, isn't it? It's difficult sometimes. I don't know if it's because of our Midwestern values and feels arrogant. I'm not sure, but it becomes difficult. There's a reason for that. It's called negativity bias. Negativity is literally hardwired for us as human beings. It is in our DNA. Science believes that this is evolutionary and that it goes all the way back because it kept us safe. Like, hey, here comes that big thing. What do they call it? A dinosaur? Remember the last time it came through here? It ate Charlie. I miss that guy. Maybe we should get to the cave where it's safe. Negativity bias has some value. It helps keep you aware. It helps to keep us safe. But also, it does a lot of harm. It can be incredibly self-destructive. And we naturally, you don't have to try and look for negativity. You see it everywhere. If you want to be outraged or angry or anything, you don't even have to try. But to be positive, that is intentional. It's like going to the gym. You have to put in the work. That's just the truth. I'll give you an example. Let's say that you were a singer-songwriter, okay? And you have now written what you believe is a surefire hit. It is an incredible song. You get the opportunity to go out and you play in front of 100 people. And people lose their minds. It is the best song they've ever heard. And on the way out, each and every person stops by to tell you how amazing it was, how it affected them. They have tears in their eyes. You are incredible. When am I going to see you again? All the way through 99. And then number 100 comes up. And they say, it's good. Truthfully, it's not my kind of music, but I totally you know, recognize talent and you can definitely write a song, yeah, it's good. It's just not really my thing. Which one do you think you're going to think about? The 99 people who were blown away by your efforts? Or the one person who didn't even say anything bad? They just said, honestly, it's not my type of music, but you are very talented. In your own head or in our heads, we concoct this thing, right, that becomes so bad I can't believe it. And you start talking to yourself, I suck. I am the worst. I'm going to put down my guitar. I'm never going to try this again. And you know what? How dare that person think this or that or the other thing? That's negativity bias. That's how it becomes very harmful. It is that voice that tells you you can't, and that voice is lying to you. So a couple of things you can do. Anytime you feel those negative statements coming along, when I hear Frank, I shut them up. I've already set myself up with five things I love about myself that day, and I say, Frank, that's it. I don't want to hear from you anymore. You go to your room. I'm intelligent. I'm a loyal friend. I have wonderful opportunities. Right, and on and on, and it's a work. You have to work at it. It feels funny, it feels awkward, it feels disingenuous, but it's true. But if you make positive I am statements every time that voice comes up, you will start to believe it, and you have to do that. You have to combat it, because the negativity, we feel that more strongly. So in order to do that, it's not a fair ratio. It's about 4-1. You have to keep the positivity. The other thing, don't compare yourself. Don't compare yourself to anybody else's life, and especially on social media, forget it. Those people aren't living those lives. But it's so easy for us to go, man, I sure wish I were that person. Look at how beautiful they are. Look at how smart they are. Look how much money they have. I sure wish that I were that person. Those people are looking at you thinking, look at them. I love the way they dress and the confidence that they walk with, and everybody likes them. I sure wish I were that person. My journey is not yours, and yours is not mine. Stay in your lane and appreciate those things that you have. And that is an intentional thing. Last week, I saw a speaker who sent me an email thing, and this guy has built an incredible business. He was booked every day or every weekend solid for like the next year. I started getting all down on myself, like, oh no, I have such a long way to go. Look with this. I was jealous. How ridiculous. This person is in my contacts. He's offered to help me. He's giving me a way to help me. And look how far I've come, just standing here being with you today. Think about yourself. Concentrate on you. Purpose. This is a hard one. This is difficult because people tend to think that purpose, you only get just one. Especially for students or younger people, like, what am I going to do? What is my purpose? And what if I get it wrong? What if I make that choice and that decision and it turns out it wasn't the right one? That's it. My life is over. Well, first of all, let me help clarify something for you, and I've learned this the hard way. You do not have a singular purpose. The important thing is to have purpose. To have something to get up for in the morning that drives you. And it might be volunteering down at the animal shelter. It might be the project that you're working on. It might be your entrepreneurial efforts. It's simply to have purpose. And when that purpose changes, you can change. You can pivot. Just keep moving forward. Your purpose really comes down to two things. Three things, really. Number one, accept your limitations. People always say, there are no limits. That's ridiculous. Of course there are. I was never going to be a supermodel, not even on my very best day. I really wasn't. It's not because I'm ugly or unlovable. It's because I do not possess the ridiculous standard of beauty that those people have to attain. I could try. I could go out and do it and walk the runway. Honestly, I probably wouldn't be terribly successful at it. Limitations are not there to tell you that you're not worthy. They're there to show you where your strengths are. I know it's not this. It's done you a favor. You know those graphs where like you have the vertical line and the horizontal line and they meet over here and here? This is your area where your passions meet your skill set. This is how to help define those things. The important thing is that you try. Because you will find yourself. You will discover yourself. And it will open all kinds of new opportunities for you. But you have to move forward with a sense of purpose. Overcoming adversity. This is widely misunderstood as well. And this, I want you to know a lot of these things overlap. And you'll start to see how they do. Sometimes when life gets difficult, we quit. That's it. I quit. I give up. Let's say you found your purpose and you put in a little bit of time and you did it the first time and nobody gets it right the first time. And you think, well, that's it. I'm terrible at this. It's over. I've got nothing in life. I quit. Don't quit. Learn. Pivot if you have to. Try again. Not every one of these that I've ever done has gone swimmingly. I know you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to always say, it's great. It's easy. I'm the guy. I'm the person for the job. Never had a problem. That's not true, and it's not life. And people who tell you that are being ridiculous. That's absolutely not true. It is okay to fall on your face and keep going and keep trying. Keep moving your feet, because if you don't, the view never changes. Even if you don't get where you think you're going to be, you're getting somewhere. You've gotten further away. So don't quit. But feel free to stop. You can stop to take a breather. You can stop to take some time for your mental health just because you're exhausted. Also because it's not working for you any longer. Stop. If this is not a good fit, if this is not working, it didn't mean you quit and you gave up because you gave up on yourself. It means that you know yourself enough to say, no, this wasn't the right one, but I appreciate the experience. I'm going to pivot over this way, and I'm going to try this one. Stopping is perfectly valid and okay. And to keep beating your head against the wall with something that isn't working isn't healthy. And it's not a smart thing to do. But just don't quit. Don't quit on yourself. But stop the activity if it no longer works. I hope that makes sense. Speaking of such things, letting go, and this can be very, very, very difficult. I had a hard time letting go of my identity as the victim. Don't you realize what happened to me? Don't you realize how scarred I am? Don't you realize? There's nothing sexy about a full-grown man in his 30s who balls up his fist and batters his midsection out of frustration. Newsflash, that's not a super great coping mechanism. Don't believe the hype. It's not that great. It's kind of embarrassing, really. Shameful. But it's honest. If something is no longer working for you, even if it's an identity that you cling to because it's all you know, we can be very fearful of moving on to the next because we're so afraid of change. Because change hurts. Change is painful. But do you know what is more painful? Staying where you are when it's not bringing any value, when you know it's time to leave. Margaret, did I tell you today that I like your shoes? No, I do. Can I try them on? Oh, I'm sorry, what was that? She doesn't think they'll fit. That is the nature of letting go. She's right. They're not going to fit me. When something is no longer fitting, it's time to move on. You need a new pair of shoes. When you were young and you were little and your parents bought you those pro kids and you could run faster and jump higher, you know the ones, look, Mom, no hands. When that happened, eventually as your foot grew, your toes were going to become, well, they'd butt up against the shoe. Do you know what I'm saying? That's when you knew your toes got sore. Have you ever seen photos of people who have been stuck in shoes? And I'm not joking about this. I've actually seen this. Feet become gnarled when the shoe doesn't fit, when your foot outgrows the shoe. They get all gnarled up. The toes get mangled. The bone structure changes. Without being graphic, if you stay in an unhealthy relationship, or in a career that is not good for your mental health, if it served you at one time, if your coping mechanism served you at one time, but now it's causing more problems than it's worth and it's time to move on, if you stay, your life becomes like that foot. You're going to incur all sorts of damage. Leaving it behind might be painful at the time, but it's going to open you up to new experiences and things that you love, new opportunities. Letting go is part of life, and sometimes it's a friendship. When you are doing too much for that friend, you know the friend you're trying to help all the time? And they always need your help. It's too much. How does that work for your mental health? I can't leave my friendship, because what about my friend? What about you? Your friend is fully capable of getting their own help. Be there in the manner that you need to, but not at the sacrifice or the expense of your own spirit, of your own health, of your own happiness. That's serving nobody. That's not helping. That is what we're talking about right here, our boundaries. When somebody takes too much of your life, do you ever feel this with family members? Have you ever felt like suddenly somebody else's responsibilities, you don't even know when it started, but now your or their responsibilities are now yours? And suddenly, if you choose to stop, even though it's not even your thing, you're a jerk. How can you leave me like this? Those are blurred lines. That is a boundary that is no longer working. There are so many ways and boundaries with relationships and people and your jobs, but also even with yourself. Maybe you need some quiet time to yourself. So you say, hey, friends, from 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, I will be unavailable. I'm shutting my phone off. No text, no nothing. I will not be, because I need me time. And you know what a great boundary is? No. N-O, period. No. You don't even need the apology. You don't need an explanation. It's great, simple, one syllable. No. I do that for myself because I have to. And if people don't understand your boundaries, if you have a do not disturb sign up on your dorm room door or your bedroom door when you are doing homework and those people are intrusive and, oh, you don't need that anyway, they don't respect your boundaries in the first place. They are an example of why you need them. Don't be afraid. And it is a skill, and it's scary. You can tremble when you do it. All of these things are hard. They don't come easily, and they don't come quickly. And they seem so simple, but I am telling you, over the long haul, over the course of time, they are so powerful, and they are so liberating and freeing. So even if you're scared, just do it afraid. That's okay. Be afraid. I'm afraid that today I got up here, I was shaken. But I'm here, and I'm so glad that I am. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about communication. I saved this one for last deliberately. I don't get political. I have no desire to do it. But just in the abstract, I am ashamed right now to be called an adult. I don't want to be lumped in with those fools. The way that those quote-unquote adults, the two sides, are going at each other, screaming and ranting and raving, that is not communication. That is showing a younger generation that it is okay to act like imbeciles, to act like toddlers. That is the truth. That is not communication. Noel, if you and I just met today for the very first time, like if someone said, hey, this is Noel Ponder, this is Steve Hansen, in a normal conversation, what would be a question that, like, you would ask somebody, hi, nice to meet you, and your first question to me would be, it wasn't too bad. Thankfully, the snow was gone for the most part. The roads were dry, but my tires are bad. Oh, my gosh. You should see my tires. And I had to get in. The thing is I maxed out my credit card, so I couldn't even get to it. I suppose that goes way back to my mom because, you know, she was a great cook and everything. But, like, she would sometimes, I need to get this, when she should have spent the money on tires. So I guess it's a learned behavior. But for the holidays, which is not true, but I'm just making this. But if that were true, and then all of a sudden I'm talking about the holidays, when I remember this one holiday and her tires were so bad, and we all made a joke about it. Thank goodness Mom made it home safe and all that. That's the year she made the fruit salad. You know the kind with the noodles? Yuck. Noodles do not go with fruit salad, and on and on and on. What does that have to do with the question, how was your drive down here today? People are so busy listening to respond, they're not paying attention and engaging. Communication is dialogue. It's not a monologue. It goes two ways. My drive was good. Thank you so much for asking. How are the roads for you? Do you live close to the college? Oh, absolutely. See how that works? It's a back and forth. When you are ranting and raving like lunatics, when that happens, you have lost self-control. And self-control, yelling doesn't help, right? You can say the same thing in a calm, measured tone that you can screaming. When you have lost self-control, you have lost all respect. You have lost respect for yourself, and you have lost respect for others. It is a lost art, and you've lost credibility. That is the truth. How many of you here are familiar with a gentleman named Daryl Davis? Awesome. Daryl Davis is a musician, blues musician, piano player, is my understanding. And I've watched him speak and talk. He is a black man. And he, and I want to say this was the 80s or 90s. I honestly forget right now how long ago this was. But he began seeking out members of the Ku Klux Klan. And he befriended them. In the interest of having a conversation. And he very slowly and systematically, can you imagine the courage that that would take to go sit in a room with people that you know don't like you for the dumbest of all reasons? But what Mr. Davis has understood, and I've heard him talk about this, even though the actions of the Klan obviously are evil, he didn't think that those people are necessarily at their core evil incarnate. They're misinformed, ridiculously so, and they are afraid and they are fearful. To have that conversation was incredibly fearful. To date, Mr. Davis has had over 200 Klan members turn in whatever, uniforms, sheets, cones on their head, whatever that is. But he has affected and impacted the world for positive change through actual dialogue and communication. These people went to him and said, I can't hate you. You have debated me every way down the line, and every truth that I thought and my general sweeping assessments were wrong. Over 200. I'm going to look at this right now, and I am sorry. I don't want to do this by phone, but I saw a quote. It actually comes from a TED Talk from Mr. Davis, and he says this. What I have come to find to be the greatest and most effective and successful weapon that we can use, known to man, to combat such adversaries as ignorance, racism, hatred, violence, is also the least expensive weapon and the one that is the least used by Americans. That weapon is called communication. I would urge everybody in all generations, especially the younger ones, because we need you. The world needs you. You're next in line. Bring a little civil discourse back. Bring communication back. It doesn't mean you have to like it. It doesn't mean you have to agree. But what is the other way getting us? I'm asking. If you can point to anything positive, I don't see it. Also, speaking of these things, these are not communication. You don't think this is hard on your mental health? Where do you go without this thing? You ever lose your phone for 5 seconds? Right? It's very scary. This isn't helping. Put these things down. You're worth more. Okay. As we're wrapping up here, I want to call this the time principle. One of the things I'm most upset about right now, especially as I see the generations that have come after me, I'm so astonished by the amount of people who tell you what you can't do. It's dumbfounding to me that the cards are always stacked against you, that you can't, you can't, you can't, you shouldn't. Let me care for you. When people say you can't think for yourself and no, you let me handle it, don't walk, run. That's nonsense. That is the biggest flaming horse hockey to ever come down the pike. It's absurd. We each have a finite amount of time. None of us knows how much, you included. This is your life, and as far as I know, it's the only one you're going to get. Time. T-I-M-E. What can you do today? You can take control. Not of other people, not of anybody else's reactions, but yours. Your actions and your mannerisms. You can think every day when I get up, who am I? Who am I becoming? And who do I want to be? And how do I affect this change? Even if it's just locally, even if it's within my own family. But that's, you are the only thing you can control. So take control of that. Invest in yourself, and that comes from belief, and use these skills in your self-talk, and you remind yourself how awesome you are and what you are capable of. Make a plan. That one's scary because, again, the plan, oh no, what if the plan goes wrong? What if it does? What do you think's going to happen? You lost a little bit of time. We'll try again. All a plan does is get you in the mood or the mode to do the next thing, which is then execute. Execute said plan. That means moving your feet. Again, if your feet are moving, the view changes. If not, if you are stuck there with feelings and feelings alone, you simply dig a deeper hole. It's not helping you at all. I came here today with the hope that I will affect a little bit of change. I guess I'm selfish. I would love to know that I'm one little tiny, 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 tiny brick in who you are going to be, one thing that you could stand on, a little tiny part. But whether I'm part of that or not, honestly, in the end, doesn't matter. This is up to you. Your peace, your confidence, your success, your happiness, these things are matters of time. And your time is now. I do want to thank you for allowing me to be here with you, to spend some time. Thank you all for coming out. I can't thank you enough. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
And thank you all for being here. We are going to open up Q&A in just a minute, but first off, some housekeeping, some announcements. This is the first convo of many. If this is your first convo with us, please don't let it be your last. We have many interesting topics. Go to carleton.edu and search for convocations, and you'll see the list of all the upcoming speakers as well as archived speakers that you can frequently watch videos or listen to the podcast. Next week, we are going to have Françoise Baylis, and the title will be Altered Inheritance, the Era of Designer Babies. Françoise Baylis is a distinguished research professor emerita from, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Dalhousie University, Canada. She is a philosopher whose innovative work in bioethics at the intersection of policy and practice has stretched the boundaries of the field. So, should be very interesting. Convo Luncheon. After convocation, we have a luncheon. Hence the name, Post-Convo Luncheon. We do have a few spaces left. If you would like to join us, please see me afterwards. We would love to have you. Who can come? Faculty, staff, students, community members, anybody can come. So please let me know, and we have space for you. There will probably be deliciously flavored Ferndale turkey, as well as a vegetarian option, roasted vegetables, and some other tasty treats. That will be at the AGH meeting room. Let's move on to Q&A, and this includes our friends on Zoom. If you're on Zoom and you have a question for Steve, please send it in the chat and it will be relayed to me. In the meantime, you are here right now. And as our speaker said, your time is now. So who would like to start off with a question? Or a comment? Or an experience?
the first one is always the hardest. Aha.
Hi. Thank you for speaking today. I guess you talked a little about personal kind of stuff. What's been kind of the main tool that you've used to kind of help yourself through the negative talk?
Hi. Thank you for the question, getting the ball rolling. Those skills, well, it's a combination. All six of those skills, I would say, well, for the negative talk, I think that the adversity is a huge part. So the reminding myself that I'm worthy, and not only saying the words, but believing it. And I don't really know how else to do that other than repetition, in my experience, seems to be the most, where you need to be very proactive about those things. Like when those things start coming out, stop. What am I good about myself? Also, discernment. I guess we didn't talk about discernment versus judgment. If something happens and it's a bad situation and it doesn't go well, our typical response is to blame ourselves. Like somehow I am deficient. I have not. What if you are able, and you are able, to step back and kind of look at a broader view and say, what was my part in this? Does it mean I'm a terrible person? Does it mean that I'm dumb? Does it mean any... No, it means you were doing the best you had with your tools at the time, right? With the negativity, because you want to assert, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm so this. If you can paint a more rational view of what happened, and then you think, I'm just going to learn from it, and the next time I'm going to try this instead. And if you get that better result, if you don't, then you try again. But holding yourself to some account and reminding yourself that it is not personal and it is not you, it literally is that voice inside of you. It's that alter ego that wants to keep you down. And the only real words I guess I have, or the only way it's going to get easier, is to begin doing it. And I promise you will see the results in kind. And as you see more results, once you get one, you go, well, that worked. I'm going to try that again. And then you get a couple more, and then you continue. And it becomes kind of like a snowball rolling downhill. It just gains steam. Does that kind of answer your question? Okay. I hope so. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for coming. Your talk was lovely. I was wondering if you have any kind of like weekly or daily habits of like journaling or therapy that have helped you, and like how the external part of that has kind of continued your journey.
Regarding to what aspect, like journaling or is addressing what issue or what problem?
Do you rely on any of them to work through like present issues or past kind of like feeling? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. The journaling, when the bullying was really at the surface, right? Yeah, the journaling helped, and really taking that time to identify. So I'll give you one thing that really worked, and I don't want to take too much time, but I want to answer this. When I was in the shrink's office, when I was in the therapist's office, she said, Steve, was there one bully that was any worse than the others? And I said, no. And I was lying, of course. There was. I just didn't really want to address it. And eventually it came out, and his name was John. And it's also important to remember, too, that they also were kids. It doesn't mean they're terrible people. It just means the impact at the time was terrible. In fact, one of those bullies is now like a brother to me, one of my very closest friends. So people change. But to your question, she had me write. She said, I want you to write a letter to John. Tell him all the things, right? So I wrote it out. And the first time, actually, she said, I went back. She said, did you write your letter? And I said, no, because I was terrified. I didn't want to face it, and I was afraid she was going to make me mail it to this grown man. I'm like, I'm not doing that. And she said, Steve, stop wasting my time and yours. You came here because you don't know how to solve your problems. I know more. If you're not going to do it, don't come back. Ooh. So I did it, and I hated her for it. And I sat in her office, and she said, did you bring the letter? And I said, yes. And she said, read it. So I read it, and then she's like, out loud, which was worse. And it began with, Dear John, and I couldn't tell you the massive amount, but I still remember the last paragraph. I said, I know you were just a kid, but so was I. I guess that's why I'm writing you this letter today. I have finally realized that in order for me to move forward, some things need to be left behind. Goodbye, John. And just saying it after writing it out and verbalizing it, so powerful. And so Kim was right. And now I really hated her because I didn't want to admit she was right. And then she let me crumple it up and toss it away. So yeah, I think journaling can be a real gift. Or even if you're alone at home and you talk through these things, like if you write that letter and just do it for yourself. Because sometimes we have these feelings, but we never actually verbalize them. And the difficulty with verbalizing those things is we don't think enough of ourselves, like we really deserve to get to say these things. And when you do, you're like, oh, that's so powerful. So yeah, the written word can absolutely help. Does that answer any of your question?
Yes, thank you.
I hope, yeah, and thank you for being here.
Hi. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
So I think that there's like, I think oftentimes we think that showing up for ourselves is synonymous with not showing up for the people in our life, that like those two things can't happen at the same time or that one can't influence the other. And I think you touched on this a little bit, but I was just hoping you could like expand a little bit more on why showing up for ourselves is actually more valuable when we show up for our friends later.
That's a great question, and yes, I can. This example won't resonate with everyone, but in case you didn't notice, I like analogies, so this one will work. We lost, my father's still alive at 81 years of age. We lost my mother a couple, two, 3 years ago from a massive heart attack, but dementia and all these things. My father was her primary caregiver. And we live far enough away, we simply couldn't be there every day. And if you are there every day, you lose yourself. And their care goes downhill. I watched my father, he wouldn't let my mother get up. And he wasn't trying to harm her, right? But he was afraid for her getting up. She would fall, she would do all these things. Pretty soon, because my dad was so exhausted, my mother was missing medications. My mom could spot a speck of dust at 500 yards, so I went over to her house and I pulled back the sheets once because my dad was allowing her to sleep late into the afternoon. She was sleeping on a urine-soaked mattress, which I lost my mind. I talked to them every day. They would begin hiding things from me because I knew she was falling. I knew there were other things. But my father loved my mother, and they had been together almost 60 years, and he couldn't fathom the idea that he wasn't enough. He lost himself and almost died. I thought he was going to die first. The weight of the world had punished him so much that his head was down so low it literally sat almost beneath his shoulder blades. My mother was not getting the care she deserved and needed because my father couldn't let go of the thought. And you can say, well, why didn't you just, the law doesn't work that way, so let me save you some questions. He couldn't fathom that he wasn't enough, that he was somehow disappointing my mother. And in our life, like that is why you have to show up as the best version, because if not, responsibilities that are not yours will begin to bludgeon you, and they will chip away, and suddenly you will not be enough, and you will be tired, and you will be exhausted, and then you're going to fail, so then it starts because, why couldn't I couldn't do this, and it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that becomes more and more. It becomes overwhelming, like an avalanche. Does that help answer anything? Okay, you do have to care for yourself first. It is the only way you can extend a hand up. I'll tell you one more thing. If you're in a boat, right, and you're the only, there's five of you and one person in the water, and you all reach down and you figure out, you can pull that person up, right, together. You can do that. If five people are in the water and you're the only one and you reach over and they all grab your hand, what's going to happen? You're going in. That is the nature of why it's important. Yeah.
Hi. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Please bear with me for a minute because I'm a little nervous while I'm speaking and trying to think of what I'm going to say at the same time. It would seem as though the bullying in your fourth grade did a tremendous amount of damage in your life, and you spent a lot of time overcoming that. And now you're here to help others overcome the same type of problem. Is that correct?
Well, that's an example of my specific issue, but I know that things right now, there are a couple of things, like the world can be so overwhelming, so I'm trying to give a few coping skills along with it, and also, I have been with some students who are so smart, so intelligent, so driven, and so afraid to make a move, because someone, what if they don't like it? And somebody said to me, you know, if you say or do the wrong thing, everyone's going to be on that phone, they're going to be texting you, and everyone's going to know about it down here. That's not helping anything. I fully can grasp and understand why you wouldn't want to make that move when you constantly fear that you are under the microscope. So I'm trying to give some healthy boundaries and some yeah, if you're bullied or you feel that way, but just life skills in general that will help you through the tough times.
The reason I asked, if the bullying is a problem, and it is such a problem today, it always has been, mm-hmm. That seems to be maybe a good way to help future generations would be to figure out a way to stop the bullying. I'm a retired junior high teacher, so yeah, I saw a little bit of it. And I think if there were some way that we could get some method that teachers could use to stop bullying in the first place, we wouldn't have to do so much damage control later in our lives. If that were possible, and if we could think of a way to talk to teachers and give a talk that would help them understand bullying and how to get it to stop, that would be wonderful. I wish I could think of a way to do it.
I think you and I are in the same boat. If you could tell me what a way would be, I'm all ears. I would love to know what that is. Also, I have found when I've reached out to high schools and stuff, they are reluctant to bring speakers in. Oftentimes, I think it's because they don't want to draw the attention to something negative, or they turn a blind eye to the fact because it doesn't happen directly in front of them. I'm not being belligerent or disagreeing with you in any way, shape, or form. That has just been my experience.
And I think we have time for one more question.
Okay.
If we have... Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Dia. Thank you.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Dia.
Hi, Dia. Steve, hey. Nice to meet you.
It's really more of a comment to his question or concern. I think a lot of behaviors start from home, so I feel like there's a good amount of things that teachers can do, but a lot of these behaviors, at least my opinion, start from things that take place in the household, and then they bring it to the school, and then the school is like, okay, they're teaching, they're playing 2-3 roles, already underpaid. So I think it would be nice if some behaviors in the household were better.
I 100% agree with you. I'm not certain, in my own experience, that you can stop little kids from doing some of the thing, even under the very best of circumstances. But I agree with you. But one thing I found that is infuriating is when their son or daughter participates in these things and they are called out, the parents say, not my little baby. My child would never do such a thing. That is where the accountability issue, like, it might happen, but it doesn't have to be a continuing problem. That is a point of frustration, and it's a great point. Thank you for making it.
And on that pretty much brings us to time. So thank you, Steve, for being here.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you all for being here. We'll see you on the nomination.